You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. At the request of the U.S. and Britain, the U.N. Security Council voted in favor of slapping new restrictions on Iraqi imports today in an effort to prevent, they say, Baghdad from acquiring equipment that could be used in a possible war. Russia and Syria abstained from the vote, arguing that the changes hurt deliveries of humanitarian goods to Iraq. Reuters News Service reported over the weekend the Bush administration wants to continue the U.N. Oil for Food program for Iraq, even after a war on the country. But most of the people who work for the Oil for Food program oppose it. They also oppose the war. Peace Watch correspondent Aaron Glantz caught up with one such person, Captain Turan Cham. They spoke at the western end of the Iraqi oil pipeline in Yamaturk, Turkey.
For 7 years, Turkish Captain Turan Cham piloted oil tankers across the Mediterranean Sea in the Atlantic Ocean. Now he helps oversee the Turkish terminus of the Mosul-Kirkuk oil pipeline, the only legal transport of northern Iraqi oil to hungry consumers in the U.S. and Europe. He looks down at 13 giant vats built for crude oil. The tankers are half empty.
Too many tanks is empty because there is too many problems in Iraq also, because they cannot make enough the oil is in service. And the rate is, the capacity is less than 50% at the moment.
Sharp cuts in Iraqi crude exports cost Turkey over $100 million annually in lost oil royalties. Like his counterparts at Turkey state oil company BOTAŞ, Captain Cham thinks a war on Iraq will result in a new flow of oil out of Iraq and into Turkey.
If this war will happen, if you look the only for pipeline site, then somebody will open it, maybe 1 year later, maybe 2 years later, and because over the world they need the oil, everybody needs the oil, and there is a big capacity in Iraq, and there is a existing tank farm and pipeline, then we have to use this pipeline.
And yet, Captain Cham opposes the war.
For only oil, too many people or child will die in Iraq. Then somebody will earn the money from this business, but nobody can compare the life is going in there. Too many people will die in there. We have to think about this. Okay, we are working half capacity, but on the other hand, maybe thousands of thousands of children will die in this war. Then maybe I will earn money, but think about the one hand is Iraq. They will lose their life, not only money.
Cham says he sees the effect of 11 years of war and sanctions on Iraq in the actions of Iraqi oil company officials who work at his Turkish port.
We have Iraqi officer and we are working with them, and I can see the their eyes, and the situation in Iraq is very, very bad. The people cannot find the medicine, even the milk for their children. Think about the 10 years, more than 10 years. Now they cannot buy anything.
That was Aaron Glantz reporting from Turkey. Among the hundreds of thousands of people opposing a U.S. attack on Iraq, many are proposing alternatives to war. For this year-end program of Pacifica's Peace Watch, we bring you A Culture of Peace, a two-part series produced by Reem Kathuda, Pacifica's Peace Watch correspondent at Pacifica Station WPFW in Washington.
The loudspeakers were ordering everyone back to their workstations. Their survivors were those who disobeyed. A short, simple piece by probably the preeminent Latin American historian, Uruguayan Eduardo Galeano, capsulized it best when pondering foreign policy after 9/11, 2001.
These words opened the first annual Peace and Justice Studies Association conference at Georgetown University this year. The forum addressed confronting injustice, ending war, the role of peace educators and activists after 9/11. It attracted hundreds of peace activists and educators who stated the challenges to a world peace culture as the uneven effects of globalization, the rapid expansion of the military-industrial complex, and the erosion of human rights and civil liberties around the world were well underway before the tragic developments of 9/11. In the next segment, we will hear peace educators and activists pondering on the U.S. foreign policy and investigating strategies to uproot what the association calls U.S. structural violence.
My name is Predrag Čičovacký. I direct peace studies at College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts, and I would like to read to you a petition against the war on Iraq. We, as citizens of the United States and as citizens of countries from around the world, voice our deep concern over the plans to attack Iraq. We urge you not to take this step. Our judgment is that unleashing massive violence and a military invasion against Iraq is neither necessary nor moral. For 12 years already, innocent Iraqi civilians, especially children and the elderly, have suffered from extreme deprivation brought about by ruthless military strikes and subhuman economic sanctions against their nation. A large-scale attack would take numerous lives of soldiers and civilians alike. It would furthermore contribute to prolonged regional instability and spread an already growing impatience in the world toward the arrogant display of power by the U.S. government. Let us not escalate the cycle of violence and use the terrorist methods that we ourselves condemn. Let us not turn our concern about the policies of Saddam Hussein into morally unjustified crusade against the people of Iraq. What we need is not absolute U.S. economic and political dominance over the world, but a new way of thinking. Instead of attacking Iraq, let us build a genuine and sustained dialogue with all other nations of the world. Let us work to build up the United Nations and to enlist people of goodwill across the globe in an intelligent, morally coherent offensive against terrorism and its causes. Instead of bombing other countries, let us work with others to find alternative methods of resolving conflicts. Instead of rushing from one military campaign to another and building military bases all over the world, let us focus on our own dehumanizing inner cities, our countless jails, and our rapidly diminishing civil liberties. What we need is not a cheaper price of oil, but affordable housing, medical care, and education for everyone, renewed commitment to civil liberties, decent wages, and a clear environment. What we need is peace, not war, which always, however smart the weapons, becomes a reckless disregard for human life. What we need are leaders guided less by false patriotism and narrow self-interest, more by love for humanity.
My name is Chris Tuffalo, and I direct the Justice and Peace Studies program at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota. That is our situation in the United States. As we eat our dinner, we watch bodies being torn apart or houses being torn apart. And it brings me back to when I was 8 years old and I used to watch the news every evening, watching the body bags come home from Vietnam as we ate dinner as a family. And my question is actually raised by a student of mine who's a Marine who linked the issue of the fact that we don't have a domestic energy policy to our foreign policy in the Middle East. And I guess as we talk about framing an anti-war movement again, can't we link this in a way that we talk about a demand for a foreign policy based on human rights and democracy, the first task meaning preventing the war in Iraq, secondly, changing our policy in Israel-Palestine, but third, that we have to have a domestic policy that reflects a conscious energy policy.
Rabab Abdelhadi, an Arab-American professor at New York University.
There is a perception in the United States that the reason that the U.S. is so involved is because it is dependent on Middle East oil. I'm very much for being environmentally conscious all over the world. I don't think it's just a question of Iraq, Israel, Palestine, energy. I think about it's all sorts of systems of domination. I mean, I can't see things segmented. They don't work for me, and they don't work in the way a lot of people are coming from. There needs to be first disentanglement of this whole construct that says that the reason the United States is involved is because it's dependent on oil. And if Saddam Hussein, should he go across and occupy Saudi Arabia and the rest of the oil-producing countries, there won't be energy for the United States. This is simply false.
Stephen Zunes, a well-published scholar and the co-editor for MERIP, Middle East Report, and Foreign Policy in Focus.
I concur. I think there's sometimes a tendency in the left for this kind of economic determinism that looks at everything in terms of corporate interests and class system. And in a broad sense, there's many leveled nuances of ideology, of power, or patriarchy mixed in. At the same time, I do think they are very much related. I don't think there'd be as much interest in the Middle East strategically were it not for oil, obviously. If we had more energy independence in a real environmental sustainable way, we wouldn't have these the kind of forces we have in the Gulf on an ongoing basis. I remember at the time of the first Gulf War, looking at some rather amazing statistics, that had President Carter's energy efficiency standards gone into effect in 1990 like they were supposed to and had not been eliminated by the Reagan administration, it would have made up for all the oil the United States imported at that time from Iraq, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia combined.
Eric Gustafson, a Gulf War veteran and the director of EPIC, Education for Peace in Iraq.
For activists, for professors, students on college campuses, it's always good to develop themes, to make links, to share that. But in terms of effectiveness in Washington and what EPIC does in trying to bring about a shift in U.S. policy, we have to be extremely focused in order to be effective. So there has to be an understanding about the two different approaches and where one is more effective than the other. In terms of being able to make those links in Washington and have a broad agenda where you try to push human rights initiatives with multiple countries and bringing about a sustainable energy policy and those many other policy changes, you would have to have one heck of a constituency backing you up. Hopefully that can soon come and we'll reclaim the Democratic Party. We'll see.
My name is Ronald Glossop. I'm a retired professor from Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville, where I started a peace study program, and we had that going for 30 years. It's still going. We have a UN flag flying at the center of our campus, along with the American flag. I know the problem of war is complicated. There are many different things that have to be solved, but I'm concerned about the absence of any concern about national sovereignty. And I think that is our big problem. The United Nations is a gigantic step forward from a system of international anarchy. But it has not solved the problem of international anarchy. What we need to do is to think in terms of what causes war and not just get focused on the effects of war, like war kills people. War causes many innocent people to suffer. And we have to think about the possibility of moving beyond our international system that we now have to creating a democratic world federation, something like when the United States went from the Articles of Confederation to the United States Constitution. How much do our states spend on military to protect themselves against other states? Zero. Because we have political and judicial institutions to resolve the conflicts. We've got to work toward doing that same thing at the global level. And a gigantic step that has been taken that, again, has not been mentioned here is the creation of the International Criminal Court. It's a gigantic step in the right direction.
Eric Gustafson.
In the case of Iraq, there are opportunities to bring about change, to strengthen the rule of law, and it is not through dropping bombs from 50,000 feet. It has to do with bringing about accountability for those who have committed war crimes, but to do so by strengthening the rule of law. If you talk to the Iraqi diaspora throughout the world, you will find overwhelmingly a consensus that wants to see Saddam removed. At the same time, they are deeply divided, and I would say a majority are against a U.S. intervention. They would much rather prefer the strengthening of civil society, bringing about accountability, the criminal court, those other mechanisms which can bring about change peacefully in Iraq.
It's interesting to note when you see the names that the U.S. is floating to replace Saddam Hussein, they are generals of Saddam Hussein's army that have defected in the past decade. At least the names I recognize are those who have indeed committed serious war crimes against the Kurds and others in the 1980s. So this idea that we want to bring democracy to Iraq is rather facile.
Rabab Abdelhadi.
I think there is like a different levels of analysis that we need to look at. There is the conceptual issue that the professor raised about trying to think of sort of cooperative frameworks on an international level and how to bring about less tension in the world. And addressing the causes of war, one of them is national sovereignty. But also, I think when we talk about national borders and sovereignty, we also know that a lot of these lines have been arbitrarily delineated. There is all sorts of conflicts going on. Some of the causes of war have to do with the question of resources, of raw materials, of domination, all sorts of things that need to all be addressed. That if we're talking about how are we going to educate in the classroom, there is another level on dealing on the pragmatic issues. Of what do we do about Iraq, for instance? I'm very, very much troubled by the way that we also sometimes lose sight of all the various countries that violate the rights of their people. I mean, one of the persons who was brought to Belgium to be tried for war crimes was Sharon. And one of the casualties of this new deal that the United States made with the rest of the world is basically getting Sharon off the hook for the war crimes and enabling him to continue. I mean, he's been emboldened by all of this stuff. And so, and this is not the only case. There are countries all over the world, governments all over the world. The first of all is the United States government that should be brought to trial for all the things that it's doing against the rest of the world and actually checking whether the people who are in the White House right now are really representative of even by the vote. I'm not even going about whether they express our sentiments or they really reflect our interests. I'm just talking about even the vote, what happened in Florida. I'm from the Arab world, and people hate Saddam Hussein. The majority of people think of him as a ruthless dictator. And by the way, part of the solution is making it a Hashemite kingdom. The most recent analysis in Israeli papers is putting the Palestinians in Jordan, which is a long-term Sharon plan, and making Iraq the Hashemite kingdom and appointing Prince Hassan, who is the brother of the passing King Hussein, who did not get to be the crown prince, so King Abdullah becomes the king in Jordan, to be the ruler of Iraq. And this is what happened at the meeting of, quote-unquote, the opposition in Iraq in London. Conceptually, again, we talk about having republics as a form of democracy. On the other hand, we want to institute monarchies. On another level, we talk about these people who have been in the backward, primitive, feudalist lives in Afghanistan and so on. But there are some princes and kings and monarchies that we like who happen to be very democratic, like the royal family of Saudi Arabia, for instance. That's extremely democratic. The greatest ally of the United States provides resources to its people. We talk about weapons of mass destruction. Iraq may have the potential to build weapons of mass destruction, but the 200 nuclear bombs in Dimona and Israel are just a very small, incidental, irrelevant matter. I agree with you about the need to do specific action. When you call your representative, you want to ask for one thing only, because they also have very short attention span. Otherwise, they won't be in Washington. And it's one thing to do one specific campaign, but it's another thing to link things together, to think about things in a broader way, because we are in it for the long term.
Rabab Abdelhadi, Eric Gustafson, Stephen Zunis and other peace educators recommended paying attention to alternative energy sources and reducing consumerism, poverty, racism, and other forms of social injustice and inequality to truly move to a culture of peace where all will strive. This forum, Confronting Injustice and Ending War, the Role of Peace Educators and Activists After 9/11, was organized by the Evergreen College Peace and Justice Studies Association. Thanks to David Russo from the Independent Media Center in Washington, D.C. for covering this conference. For Peace Watch, reporting from WPFW, Pacifica Station in Washington, D.C., I'm Reem Katkhuda.
For 15 years now, peace activists have held a regular vigil outside the Pentagon building every Monday. Peace Watch producer Scott Gurian joined them early this morning and files this report.
We hold signs, vigil, and pray, and invite workers to consider what they're doing in a spirit of love, compassion for them. We try to dialogue with whoever would like to talk. Many people say, well, what good does it do to just stand out there for an hour? And we say, what happens if we're not there? People will never consider what they're doing. The Pentagon is the center of war making on our planet. And we go there as people of faith and conscience to present a nonviolent alternative to the killing and war that comes out of that place.
Bill Frankel Street. You used to live here in D.C. at the Dorothy Day Catholic Worker House. When was it that you first started going to the Pentagon every Monday morning?
Wow, that would have been in 1988.
What has it been like going every single week? I know you haven't in a while because you're not living right here, but for a while you were. What was that like?
For over 10 years, I guess. And it was in every type of weather. Snow, rain, cold. But it was just a sense of one has to be there.
Describe a bit this sense of urgency, why you bore it out through the cold and through the winter and why you were there every week. What kept you going?
Well, I mean, it's just a sense that war is always imminent. Now, it's the same sense that I think people feel now. Right now, people feel an imminent war. But a more correct thing would be saying that we've been at constant war since 1945, since the end of World War II and the initiation of the nuclear age by ourselves. Remember that we're the only nation that ever used nuclear weapons. You know, we talk about Saddam saying that he may even use them. Well, we have used them, and the rest of the world knows that. And so there's a sense of urgency day in and day out that we've been involved in wars, have invaded and intervened in other people's countries for years now. And in not one of those interventions has a democratically elected government emerged.
I see the Pentagon as the center of war making on the planet. And I go begging with the spirit of begging people to resign their work for war and nuclear annihilation. And join us in the work, the very, very critically important work of abolishing war. Every time we go to the Pentagon, we bring leaflets, and we feel that it's been a good day if 20 people take our leaflets. And 20 out of more than 20,000 people who work at the Pentagon is an indication to me that most people are, they know why we're there. But they choose not to to read our what we're trying to our appeals to them. Now, I was once told that it had nothing, you know, someone was changed, and it wasn't because of what we said or our signs, but because we were always there. So I'm holding on to that hope that our perseverance and nonviolence will. It will be a powerful force to touch the lives of people who we're calling on today to resign, to leave the military, apply for conscientious objector status. That's my dream. And the other dream is that people will realize that if they're not working at the Pentagon, if they're paying taxes to the federal government, they'll refuse to do that. And that's the only way that it's going to be abolished. We refuse to give our children and our money to the makers of war.
There's, 14 people here who are willing to risk arrest?
I think that's correct. That's what I understand.
How many people total are all of you about?
I would say 70, maybe 80, including kids. Something like that.
And you're going in the metro entrance here of the Pentagon.
Yeah.
This is a little unusual, right? They usually go by a different entrance.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a new entrance, which is why we're trying it. Mm-hmm.
What? Do you have any thoughts of what might happen?
I think they're going to move very swiftly to arrest us, get us out of here.
And you're willing to risk arrest
today? Mm-hmm, you bet.
We're people of nonviolence committed to peace, and we're here to invite you to join with us.
Not
work for war. Please, you can resign your job.
And there's splattering blood on the wall of the Pentagon. Three people right now.
No war against Iraq.
Stop the killing. This is the blood of innocent people.
Three people who splatter the blood are now lying on the ground with their arms apart. People are holding up banners here. Truth is the first casualty of war. No more war, no more terror. Practice peace. No war against Iraq.
This is an exit. You need to move back.
We're not obstructing anyone.
Ma'am, if you do not move back, we will move you back by force.
You do not.
Just step back onto the grass.
You see the blood there? It can't be washed away. It's the blood of innocent people that are being shed.
Ma'am, I'm not here to talk with you about this.
Because of what's going on in the Pentagon.
I have a simple job to do, and that is make sure this area is safe. Please back up to the grass.
We want the world to be safe. That's why we're here.
Back up.
That's why we're here.
Back up, folks.
We want the war in Iraq to end.
Ma'am?
We want depleted uranium not to be used anymore in weapons.
I'm giving you 10 seconds to back up to the grass. Do you understand?
Do you know that depleted uranium causes birth
defects?
Ma'am,
I'm not going to answer any of your questions.
Causes birth defects in Iraqi people and also in veterans and soldiers like you. You get exposed to it.
Leave the military! Don't fight in war!
What do you think of everything going on here?
I think
think it's really powerful because people on this entrance, I don't think they've seen anything like this.
This is the blood of the innocent.
What do you think they're thinking right now?
Probably thinking we're crazy.
So why are you out here this morning?
To stop war.
And how old are you?
13.
What's your name?
Eleanor Ritter.
And you're from where?
Ithaca, New York.
I'm Lenore Yarger. I'm from Silcope Catholic Worker in North Carolina.
Describe the scene that we're looking at here.
Well, there's about seven huge doors leading into the Pentagon and pillars in between them, and there's blood pouring down about four of those pillars and doors. I'm just marking the blood of the victims of war around the world that are victims of this building and the work that goes on here. And on the ground are three nonviolent resistors who poured the blood, and they're being watched closely by the military police at this point. And then it's just a lot of people streaming into the building through one of the doors, and a lot of chanting going on, trying to reach those people and make them understand that this is the blood of, this is the consequence of war. This is the real consequence. It's not about freedom or oil or economic justice. It's about destruction and death and dying.
Leave the military now. Thou shalt not kill.
Why did you bring your children here today?
Because children are being killed. Our policies as a country are killing innocent children, and it's just wrong. I can't leave them in the care of somebody else and come here and protest. I think it's really important for people going in and out to see children here and to see blood on the walls and to know that the work that they do is killing children.
No more war! No more terror! No more war! No more terror!
War is a product of the Pentagon. We ask you not to be a part of it. We have brothers and sisters in Iraq. They are your brothers and sisters, too.
Okay, folks, if you do not have a permit to protest the Pentagon, you are here unlawfully. I'm going to ask you to disperse this time. If you do not disperse, we'll be forced to make an arrest.
My dad got arrested, and his dad's about to get arrested. Basically, they poured blood on the Pentagon and laid down.
Why?
Because we're going to war with Iraq. Because there's going to be people killed there.
Shalom, shalom. Shalom, shalom.
Peace activists who hold weekly vigils outside the Pentagon, speaking with Peace Watch producer Scott Gurian. 14 people were arrested. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. Special thanks also to our consulting producers Larry Binsky and Sam Husseini. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback at peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.